Hi everyone, and welcome to episode 50 of the Inside Elland Road podcast, a product which amazingly has made its half century despite expectations and despite a fairly amateur output. Happy Valentine's Day to all our amorous listeners. Joe Wilkett here with Phil Hay in the studio. Joe, did you remember a card for your good lady?
No, I haven't done anything. She probably won't be surprised when I say I'm spending Valentine's Day with you, so...
No,
spend enough of my life with you, Phil.
So. Oh, what a dream. What a dream. I think you're like us. We never do Valentine's Day, which I think tends to be the habit when you're an item, really, doesn't it?
It's a commercialised day.
Yes.
I did not envisage the podcast starting off about Valentine's Day, to be honest, but it is a commercialised day and it's a load of bollocks. So
did you send one to Calvin Phillips after last night?
I was thinking about it.
Yeah.
Well, I think everyone there should have probably shared. I mean... I think maybe we should come up... Well, you know, we obviously have Ashley Cole watch that we've still not done yet, but we said we were going to start. Maybe we should start with the Calvin Phillips appreciation watch.
Yeah, 40,000 people in here cheering and shouting. Yeah, we'll come on to Ashley Cole watch. It's not going to be a long segment, I don't think. Although, as long as I haven't been on to you after what you were saying a few podcasts ago.
Not yet.
No, hasn't quite reached them, strangely enough. Although our reach is growing, yes.
I can't believe the powerhouse that is our podcast hasn't reached Ashley Cole.
No. Well, they've got added security now at Derby County's training ground, so they've probably got probably got things blocking, jamming outside radio interference and so on. Much as Cole's trying to desperately download it in the dressing room. Anyway, we digress massively, but seriously, happy Valentine's Day to everybody. Well, back on top after. Very, very good win, I thought, over Swansea City last night. Nervous towards the end, which it had to be. And I don't think anybody who went to Elland Road for that game yesterday was expecting anything other than a tense evening. And actually, we're spared much in the way of kind of frantic moments for 86 minutes until Luke Ayling gave that penalty away right at the end. It wasn't loaded with flair, it wasn't loaded with frills, but I did think it was ultra-professional at a time of the season where the pressure is really starting to bite, not just at Leeds but everywhere now. It is going to tell. I thought they did a lot of things right. I thought they got the performance pretty much spot on, top of the field, back of the field. They just seemed to me like they had the bit between their teeth last night, and they knew that they needed to play well. They needed a good result on the board. I would put it down as one of the best performances on the Bielsa this season.
Yeah, I think it's definitely up there. It's definitely as well as we've seen Leeds play since Derby, and maybe even sort of four or five games before that. I think the free-flowing attacking football, I think Swansea made a bit of an error in letting Leeds sort of play out, and there was a few players afterwards that said that was a deliberate tactic, was to allow Leeds to have the ball in the back four with Jansen and Cooper. But as soon as it came into midfield press, and obviously when Calvin Phillips is in form like that, picking out passes, you're probably better not stand off him. But overall, I thought it was absolutely brilliant. I thought, like you say, probably one of the best, if not the best, probably one of the best. Maybe Derby was slightly better, but just from the word go, and like you say, the tenseness around the Elland Road, we were saying before, we couldn't really put a figure on the game, could we? We weren't really sure how it was going to go. We usually have a bit of a gut feeling about score predictions, but just nothing beforehand. But that early goal from Jansen definitely settled things down, and I think it got things going. And that first half performance as a team and collectively is probably as well as they've played for a number of months, barring the Derby game.
You could feel the anxiety I felt beforehand in the stadium. Not, it wasn't rife, but everybody knows that we're at the business end now, and you could see it on Twitter as well. I didn't really understand Swansea's tactics, because we'd seen 10 days earlier how effective Norwich had been with a high press, and I don't think anybody has committed to that sort of press against Leeds in the way that Norwich did in their 3-1 win. And it's a big risk, because you do leave yourself open behind if Leeds can play through the middle. And it was a struggle for Bielsa's side to do that on the night. Swansea last night gave Jansen and Cooper so much time to spread the ball about, and obviously that played to the strengths of Phillips, whose distribution was excellent, involvement was excellent, but again his defensive work in front of the back four was terrific and almost impossible to play through. And it made a difference for Swansea when McBurney came off the bench, but even when he did, and even when there was that little bit more physical presence up front, you didn't really feel a Swansea goal coming until Ayling stuck his foot in and committed that foul, which, even from his body language and his reaction, you knew that he didn't need to make it, he shouldn't have done it, and it just put everything on edge. But they're kind of strange. They've got nice players at Swansea, and nice, I think, is probably the word, but a small front line of Daniel James, who didn't have a great chance to shine in a game where he probably would have liked to have impressed, and let's be honest, afterwards was probably wishing that he'd been on the other side. Celina up front, who's a good player, but again, very slight, very small, easy character for Jansen and Cooper to deal with, given the way Swansea were playing. And Barry Mackay, decent player, but again, not much physique, not a huge amount of strength there. It was there to be won, and you did feel as if Swansea were crushed, really, for 80, 85 minutes by the professionalism of Leeds, and also the sort of clinical way that Leeds played, not necessarily in front of goal. Great chance for Bamford before half time, which would have completely killed it, but again, just a class apart.
Yeah, it got about as close as a must win that Leeds have had this year, hasn't it? After the Middlesbrough draw and the defeat the week earlier to Norwich, it felt like Leeds really needed to get back to winning ways, especially at Elland Road in front of the crowd there. And like you just said there, I think without McBurney as a focal point, I think they are quite slight and nippy, aren't they, with James, Celina and the likes of them. But so I think, again, we said it just there, but allowing Leeds to have that amount of possession coming out into sort of your half, I think that was the first sort of fall down, wasn't it? I think Leeds were, when you're gonna give up that amount of possession anyway, to allow them to bring it forward without anyone sort of pressing on was probably, in hindsight, a big mistake for Graham Potter.
There just isn't the confidence there either, as that Norwich have. I mean, in fairness to Potter, he is like Bielsa in the sense that they both have their ways of playing and they both stick to them resolutely, but it's only really working for one of them, and Swansea's results make you think that they're going to end up finishing 10th, 11th and a little adrift of 6th place. And you almost respect, do respect really what Potter's trying to do with them, but he doesn't have the team, and he doesn't have the depth to really be able to compete in the way that Bielsa's managed to get Leeds competing.
And obviously there's lots of things going on there off the field as well, which can't, I'm sure, help. We saw it firsthand, didn't we, with Daniel James, deadline day collapse. So a number of things going on there. So he seems like he's sort of steadying the ship nicely there, but they're not really going to trouble the playoffs or relegation this season.
Leeds had said next to nothing really about the Dan James deal, apart from the odd comment from Bielsa since it all went under. But Angus Kinnear was writing about it in the programme last night and was pretty much pointing to the boardroom conflict, which we spoke about in previous podcasts, the refusal of Hugh Jenkins to sign the deal off, and Jenkins then resigning as chairman 48 hours later. And was kind of complaining in the programme that a lot of negotiation and scouting that had gone into identifying James and chasing him had ultimately been wasted by them reneging on the deal. But again, given the impression that they will more likely than not be back for him in the summer if the price is still decent, if they still feel like there is a deal to be done there. I thought there were some nice touches from him last night. It was a very difficult game to gauge him on, but you could tell when he got space to play in and when the ball was at his feet that he knows what he's doing and he's got a good attacking brain. It just wasn't an evening. I think Potter said this himself. It wasn't an evening where anybody on the Swansea side was going to find it easy, and he certainly didn't. Subbed in the end before the 70th minute. I did wonder whether he'd have been coming away from that game yesterday ruined, what might have been had it gone differently on deadline day.
Oh, definitely. I think so. I think we said it at the time, didn't we, that when it sounds like they are going to go back in for him now, but whether it was going to be his one chance to come to Leeds, because you still don't know if the circumstances might change. So he's probably looking at that atmosphere as well last night and the amount of people there, and he's maybe thinking to himself, I could have been part of something special, and that's a big shame for the lad. And like you say, he had a few flashes. I think it was his pace that struck me. You don't see a lot of players that quick with the ball at the feet. Obviously, lots of players run forward with a sheer pace off the ball, but gliding past Ayling and Jansen at a couple of stages, and where you thought he might pull the trigger, he laid it off, and then I think, I can't remember who it was, but missed the ball or whatever. You thought you could
set. It was Van der Hoorn, wasn't it, at 1-0? That was a big moment. That it was the only real moment in the first half where Swansea flickered at all, but it would have changed the game somewhat had that gone in.
But yeah, you could see the flashes and what Leeds have seen in him, and it would certainly be handy for Leeds to have that sort of pace.
Pontus Jansen took the Man of the Match award last night, which was not a bad shout. He scored and he had an extremely good game at the back. It was his birthday, 28 years old. Lucky bugger, that makes him 10 years younger than me. 10 and a half years younger than me.
He's 3 years older than me.
Well, do you know, the most depressing thing about Leeds getting rid of Rob Green, which was not that well, not solely that we wound up with Felix Friedwald as number one, was that that was the last time that somebody at the club, somebody in the playing staff at Leeds was older than me. And it went without saying that nobody else from that point onwards was ever going to be older again. It wasn't a bad shout with Janssen. He had a very good game last night, albeit against the front line, which I think was absolutely tailor-made for him to trample all over. But Phillips was the pick of the players in the view of, I think, us and everybody else who was there. And his growth this season has been spectacular, really. I mean, we'll go back to the Middlesbrough game shortly, because that was in a lot of ways, that was a very eventful afternoon and a lot to talk about with that. But, I mean, extremely dramatic goal from him, his first of the season, right when Leeds needed it. But it's interesting, he was always, amongst the four players who were coming through 3 or 4 years ago, Lewis Cook, Sam Byram, Charlie Taylor, and then Calvin, he was always the afterthought, really. People respected his physical condition. They respected the fact that he looked fairly suited to Championship football. But the kind of excitement was always around Byram. It was around Cook in particular and Charlie Taylor. You're starting to wonder now, and particularly because Byram hasn't really progressed at West Ham at all. Taylor's been a bit out at Burnley, in and out at Burnley, and Lewis Cook obviously has had this injury down at Bournemouth, which isn't going to help him. And you know, again, he's had chances here and there. You actually wonder whether Phillips might turn out to be the best of them. And they're dubbing him the Yorkshire Pirlo now, aren't they? And it's not the sort of ridiculous comparison that you might expect. He's so accomplished in that role. He seems incredibly comfortable with the game playing out in front of him. So rather than being in an out-and-out central midfield role or a slightly more attacking midfield role, he's in a position where he can watch everything, he can see everything that's happening. His passing was excellent again last night. His tackling was fantastic. And last season, we went out for a couple of pints with Paul Heckenbottom, who, by the way, has turned up at Hibs as manager.
I'm sure you're loving that.
Last night, off to Hibs. I threatened my kids with that. Off to Hibs. But good luck to him. But we went for a pint with him last year.
And, great team.
Yes, yeah. We went for a pint with him last season after he was appointed. And you know, let's not pretend it went at all well for him at Leeds. But we were chatting on to him about the squad. And we were asking him about, you know, the comparison between
Are
Ronaldo
you about to
Vieira
say what
and
I think you're about to say?
Calvin Phillips. No, probably not. So hold that, 'cause you can tell me afterwards. But we were kind of making the point that Vieira seemed like the real find. You know, he seemed like the catch, like the player who was going to go on to really big things. And obviously he has gone to Sampdoria, so he's on a big stage in Serie A. But Heckenbottom said to us, in actual fact, Phillips is the one with the ability. Phillips is the one with the real talent when it comes to using the ball and being on the ball, knowing what to do with it. He said Vieira was a fantastic athlete, terrific athlete and a very good player, but he was of the opinion that actually Phillips was the one, and Phillips was the one that was probably going to come good in a quicker period of time. And he really has under Bielsa this season.
Yeah.
Go on, what were you going to say?
I thought you were going to say Heckenbottom was the one that unleashed this Calvin Phillips.
No, I think if anybody's going to claim that, it's probably going to be Steve Evans, isn't it?
Of course.
Yeah.
But it's one thing Heckenbottom saying that, but it's another thing Bielsa getting out of him, isn't it? That's
oh, no, no, 100%. But I think the point I'm making is that Phillips has always been he's always been a bit underrated, I think, and a bit underappreciated, and by us as much as anybody else.
I think that sort of comes down to the fact that he's had so many head coaches in his career already. He's, mm-hmm. what, 23? And also, he's never had a fixed position or any actual guidance of a position that he needs to play. Like dedicated wise, and obviously you said there about the number of academy players that Leeds have sold, and maybe that late sort of development has kind of helped him in the long run. I know that sounds really stupid to say, but given you're looking at Byram, Taylor, Cook is probably the most successful, isn't he, out of those three. The other two have moved on but not really kicked on as much as they were sort of showing in their first stages of the.
And Alex Moore as well, actually, yeah. Who everybody thought very highly of, but has drifted quite badly.
So, like, Phillips, as much as he's now showing it in the Championship level, and he's probably got a regime at Elland Road that's not going to sell him for peanuts, if they go up, you know. That's a different question to have in the summer, isn't it? But what I mean by that is, like, it actually might have helped him actually grow a little bit more, because the other players have been snapped up a lot sooner under different circumstances, obviously, with different owners, etc., etc., but yeah, I think that sort of late development, and obviously having a world-class coach, like we've said before, in Bielsa, who likes to mould these young minds and players, has clearly helped him. I don't know if he ever thought he could be this good. Maybe he did, but is certainly one of the best players in the Championship now, without a doubt, in his position, if not
the
best.
I think he's the best player in his position. I was chatting on to this about David Prutton earlier. We're doing his column for the paper on Saturday, and I was saying to him, who do you think is better in that role? And he was saying, I'm really struggling to pick anybody out. So you've got Gareth Barry at West Brom, but Phillips has the advantage of 15 years on him, and, you know, quicker into the tackle, sharper in a lot of respects. Prutton was saying, and I agree with this, he likes John Fleck down at Sheffield United, and they're having an excellent season. But again, I think there's more to Phillips' game than there is to Fleck's, which is not a criticism of Fleck's at all. And with Phillips, the one thing he's always had on his side, apart from the physique, and he has always been an extremely combative player who's coped physically right from the very start, is his temperament's brilliant. And I think he's kind of tailor-made to be a Bielsa protege on the basis that he's somebody who does genuinely want to learn and get better. And I think he's somebody who knows that in order to learn and get better, you need to be coached and you need to listen and you need to take guidance from people who know what you're doing. And Bielsa has just found this niche for him. It's such a specialised out-and-out role, the holding position, that there's no ambiguity about what Phillips is doing. And it was interesting. I was having a look back at how often Phillips had looked like scoring this season, because when he knocked that header in at Middlesbrough with, what, 100 minutes on the clock, straight away you thought, that's his first goal of the season. I was trying to remember any point this season where he'd looked like scoring, and it turned out that was his fourth effort on target. And what are we now, 31 league games in? I don't think he had any last night in the Swansea game, and it tells you that he's been unbelievably disciplined at sitting in that role that Bielsa has given him. He hasn't broken from it, and he hasn't tried to get himself out of it. He hasn't gone looking for goals when Bielsa doesn't want him to go looking for goals. And he's also coped incredibly well with those two massive kicks in the teeth in, you know, August, September, October time, when he was substituted after about half an hour down at Swansea and at half time against Birmingham. And I don't think it was personal from Bielsa's point of view. It never is. It's just a tactical call. So it wasn't like he was trying to humiliate Phillips, but it's got to hurt to an extent that. And you know that you're the one who's trudging off with everybody saying, well, it's, you know, it's kind of been hung around your neck. But again, just seemed to take that as quite a useful lesson and to accept that Bielsa probably knows better than him.
Yeah, and how frustrating is it that he's had to play centre-half for at least half of the season so far, like where Leeds could potentially be in the Championship? Well, we're obviously at the top, but you know what I mean?
But on the flip side, how useful has it been that he can? Because otherwise you'd have had Apple Halmy in there. And again, I don't want to be critical of Halmy, because he's done a good job when he's been asked to come in. But him and the team for 7, 8, 9 games in a row, having had virtually no first-team football in the Championship prior to that, would have been a big ask.
Yeah, 100%. I just think it's frustrating, isn't it? That, and again, maybe that comes down to the fact that Bielsa likes a tight-knit squad, and obviously Phillips is a very, very versatile player, and he goes into the mould of Bielsa wanting versatile players. But it is just a bit frustrating, isn't it, that you can see the potential, but not the potential, the fact that he's putting in these performances now, and he's now starting to get this widespread recognition in this role that Leeds haven't had, managed to have him in that role all season.
His goal at Middlesbrough was one of the talking points. The first thing we should definitely talk about is Jack Clarke, who was taken fairly, you know, ill in a bad way towards the end of the game. It was a strange situation for us, wasn't it? Because in the press box at Middlesbrough, you're at such a steep vantage point that we genuinely couldn't see what was going on. And in those circumstances, quite often you assume that somebody's been taken out of the crowd because they're ill, they're needing treatment. After a while, we start to wonder if it was one of Bielsa's coaching staff. I don't think anybody thought for a moment it was going to be, you know, a fairly fit and well 18-year-old like Clark. He collapsed at the game. He was given oxygen. He was treated by paramedics, and he was taken to James Cook University Hospital in Middlesbrough. I think it was clear to us, wasn't it, afterwards, that he wasn't in any immediate danger on the basis of what Bielsa was saying. Bielsa seemed fairly confident straight away that in terms of what was happening there and then, he was fine. But obviously there was the big concern about what had happened, and he was released on Saturday night. He spent the evening in a hotel with Rob Price, the head of medicine and performance, who we heard on the podcast last week, and then was sent home on Sunday. So having more tests this week, wasn't involved against Swansea and hasn't trained this week, won't train this week. I don't think there's a date for him to come back yet, and I would imagine there'll be, despite where the season is and despite the fact that he's been involved in it, I think they'll be ultra cautious with this one. The biggest worry, I think, with stuff like that is that we've all seen the, and we all remember the Fabrice Muamba incident, which is not in any way isolated. It's been quite almost a recurring theme within football of, you know, players having sudden cardiac arrest or sudden illnesses that leave them in very serious danger. And you could tell it was very worrying. It was very unsettling for everybody on Saturday, wasn't it? Despite the fact that he seemed to make quite a quick recovery.
Yeah, and I think that was the biggest thing, wasn't it? It was his health is paramount in that situation, isn't it? But I think we, along with everyone else in the stadium, weren't really sure on who it was and what was going on. And as soon as it sort of became clear that it was Clark, and I think it helped that obviously Bielsa was like, he's been moving around in the dressing room. He seems to be okay. He's going for some tests. So that kind of put everyone's fears to bed. But yeah, like you say there's been several cases, even in like rugby league, rugby union, in the last few years, where people have had these sort of incidents, and that was your first immediate fear, wasn't it? But thankfully it looks all right, and look, they have to be ultra careful. His health is the number one thing in this situation. Leeds United is second, you know, that's just the way it is, isn't it? So as however long it takes him to figure out what happened, how long he's going to be out, how long he can get back to playing football, then that's just how long it's going to take.
The byproduct of that was 12 minutes of injury time, which was a fair award. We were timing the stoppage while Clark was receiving treatment, and it was a good 7 minutes plus your substitutions in the second half, so it didn't seem to me like it was an unfair amount that was added on at the end. It reminded me a bit, and in different circumstances, of being down at Watford in 2013, where they lost two keepers in the first half, and I'm pretty sure wound up with 16 minutes of injury time at the end of the first half, which meant, and it was the final day of the season, they were going for automatic promotion, Hull were going for automatic promotion. Hull had, I think, drawn at home with Cardiff. Watford needed to win at home to Leeds, and it was 1-1 going into the 90th minute, but the 90th minute down at Watford was about 15 minutes after the end of play at Hull, so you had Hull's players crammed around this telly in their dressing room waiting for it to finish. But it is, we're told, the latest goal Leeds have ever scored, 11th minute, 101st minute from Calvin Phillips, that header. And I'll say this, I mean, the Clark incident could have distracted focus completely from the final minutes of the game, and that could easily have petered out. But also, it's been a long afternoon, you know, a tough game, hard game. And if you look at that goal that Phillips scored, it was a nice corner from Alioski, but it was a well-worked routine. Cooper deliberately headed the ball back across goal rather than going for goal himself, laying on a fairly easy finish for Phillips. And again, that presence of mind, and I guess the fitness and the conditioning of the players to be able to do that so late in the game is one of the things that's carrying them through and keeping them in good shape.
Yeah, and we were chatting just before we came on, weren't we, about where Leeds would be in the table if you take, I know it's one of those things, but where they would be in the table if stoppage time goals hadn't counted, and we said it was 7th on 50 points, and what are they top on, 61?
61, yeah.
So that's 11 points in added time this season, which is a big, big difference, as you can see. Again, comes back to the fitness and the regime, and you do wonder whether a few players, maybe like Barry Douglas, who have been out injured, missing a lot of that sort of pre-season, have sort of suffered because of that. And Alioski seems to just keep running and you know, kind of wind him up and off he goes. And he's sort of, with that corner at the weekend and his performance last night against Swansea, is, I think, personally, pinning down that left-back role away from Douglas, no matter if he comes back from injury. But the Borough game, I think, in general, they more than deserved a point, if not more, after that second half performance. The first half, again, defensively a bit dodgy. A couple of big chances for Aidan Flint where you'd think on another day he scores, but more than what they deserved at the end. And again, 101st minute, a signal of the season. And what it is a big momentum swing, isn't it, from Leeds side, because obviously having the defeat at Norwich a week earlier to then get that point and then get a win last night. Suddenly it's 4 points from those two games, which I think everyone would have taken beforehand, and you're suddenly top of the league again, and it's all smiles. So big point.
You're right about the second half. It was Leeds' game despite Lewis Wing scoring early in it, and you can't forget either that Jansen fractionally away from scoring in the 73rd minute with that header. Bamford should have stuck away the rebound without any question. And yeah, I think in the end, it felt like a better result because of what had gone on at Aston Villa the night before. Sheffield United somehow dropping that 3-0 lead in the last, 8 minutes plus injury time. Two crucial moments that made a difference. Alioski is worth talking about. And after him, we'll speak about Luke Ayling, because there has been a definite issue on the right side of defence, as everybody can see. He does seem more comfortable at left-back, Alioski, and I think defensively he's good anyway, but as much as he continues to overlap, it seems to some extent take the pressure off him as an attacking player. He can attack as much as he likes, but the onus isn't on him to be delivering crosses in the way that it is when he plays on the left and when he plays out and out as a winger. And the consistency of his deliveries does seem to be one of the weaknesses in his game, although an absolute peach for Jack Harrison last night, and a good goal all round. Clever run from Harrison to the near post and took that header with so much pace that Evan Mulder in the Swansea goal was kind of beaten before he moved. We got a very, very big vote of confidence in Luke Ayling from Marcelo Bielsa at the press conference before the Swansea game. And actually, just out of interest, we'll let you have a listen to this, because we've got the audio of it still. And Ayling's been a big player for Leeds. I think everybody agrees that he was one of the best signings, or the most cost-effective signings, of the Gary Monk season when he came in from Bristol City. And that, to date, has been his best year. He's had good performances this season, particularly in the first half of it. He had the knee injury in sort of October time, which certainly didn't help him. But recently it's been a struggle, and I think you could see in him that it was frustrating him at Middlesbrough, the passes that were going astray, the difficulty he was having to make a difference. He was better against Swansea, I thought, without any question. And OK, he gave away the penalty, which was daft, and he knew it was daft. But an improvement from him. And Bielsa made it very clear on Tuesday that he wouldn't be dropped, that he absolutely was going to stand by him. And one of the things that's shown through this season is how loyal Bielsa is to the players in his team, not just Ayling, but others like Alioski, others like Harrison, who continues to play and actually is starting to have good games more regularly than he was before. But just before we discuss Ayling, this is what Bielsa had to say about him on Tuesday afternoon.
Para mí, Ayling es un gran jugador.
For me, Bill Ayling is a great player.
Jugador completo.
He's a complete player.
Completo quiere decir que todas las facetas del juego las contempla.
When I say complete, I mean that he can manage all the aspects of the game.
Puede defender como lateral y aún como central.
He can defend as a fullback and he can defend as a central back.
Tiene un juego aéreo que no es común en los jugadores que juegan por los costados.
He has an aerial game that is not very common for players who play as fullbacks.
Y si dividimos el largo del campo en tres segmentos,
and if we divide the pitch in three segments,
siempre por el sector derecho,
taking into account the right side of the pitch,
él defiende bien.
He defends well.
Inicia muy bien el juego.
He's very well in the playing out.
Toma riesgos en la organización y en el manejo de la pelota.
He takes risks with when we have to organize and when we have to use the ball.
Y ha disminuido su aporte ofensivo.
And the only thing that decreased a little bit is his offensive impact.
Es un jugador que nos habituó a jugar por arriba de 7.
Is a player that usually played getting a grade above 7 points.
Y hoy juega por arriba de 6.
Over 7 points, and now he's playing getting a grade over 6 points.
Lo que nosotros no tenemos la capacidad de hacer,
the thing that we can't do,
es mirar la totalidad.
Is to look at everything.
Y vamos segmentando.
So we divide.
Y vamos dividiendo. Vamos comentando lo que pasó hace de manera muy cercana.
And we comment only the last games.
Entonces, de Ailing puedo decir solamente.
The only thing I can tell about Bill Ailing,
que su aporte ofensivo es menor.
That he contributes a little less in attack.
Y que en vez de jugar para 7 juega para por arriba de 7 juega por arriba de 6.
And usually he was getting a grade over 7, more than 7 points, and now he's getting more than 6
points.
Pero
para mí es un jugador fundamental.
But for me is a very important player for the team.
Un jugador que enciende a los compañeros, al público.
He is a player that is an example for his teammates, for the public, for the fans.
Y que tiene los altibajos de los jugadores. Hay muy pocos tipos de jugadores que no tienen altibajos, ¿no?
And you in football you have very few players that don't have ups and downs.
Y en el caso de él, la merma solo lo pone por abajo de 7, no lo pone por no lo pone en un sitio de rendimiento preocupante.
And when Bill has less impact, when Ailey has less impact, he's always above 7 points. He always have he has always more than 6 points, never less than 6 points. So even in his moments in his downs, he's always over 6 points.
Ahora puede que yo no sea objetivo.
Maybe I'm not objective.
Porque tengo un respeto muy especial por él.
Because I have a very special respect for him.
Por lo que él transmite.
For what he gives to the team.
Y porque nunca deja de asumir riesgos.
Because and also because he always assume and take risks.
Y tal vez influenciado por algo, por esa particularidad que yo admiro tanto.
And because he's influenced for this feature that I admire a lot in him.
Yo lo veo mejor de lo que lo ve usted.
Obviously, for me, it's better than what you think.
I sort of broadly agree with that, and I do think with a player like Ailing, you do need to stand by him to an extent. I guess the issue is that it's not as if there's no alternative at right back. There is Jamie Shackleton, who came off the bench last night and again looked very good, although in a sort of midfield role, which is where he liked to play as a youngster, where I think he sees his best position. Good management, though, I feel, of Ailing. Very, you know, it. As much as Bielsa was kind of saying there, look, I don't think there's an issue. The length at which he spoke tells you that he probably realises that it is a fair question and that there is, you know, there has been a drop in Bielsa's performance. But kind of batted that one straight off and killed it without, you know, without causing any problem or without making Ailing think that actually his confidence in him might be dropping.
Yeah, I don't think. It's almost like because Jamie Shackleton came in and did so as well as he did in that position and has been converted there, that because Ailing hasn't quite offered as much since he came back, that people are sort of looking at Shackleton going, well, there's a better alternative, isn't there? But it's funny, isn't it, how this season's worked out, because I think we were sat here in sort of maybe late July, early August, say after they signed Barry Douglas, saying the two wing-backs are going to be crucial for Leeds this year. And Barry Douglas has been fairly disappointing, I would say.
Yeah, I'd agree.
He's had a couple of his first couple of months were fairly good, but since then I think he's been, from what we were told, to be expecting from his Wolves days last year,
he hasn't been what was said on the tin,
yeah.
Really,
and
is it?
Ailing hasn't quite reached the same heights as he has in previous seasons at Leeds. Obviously, 100th appearance last night. He's been a great servant to the club in that respect, and obviously has struggled with a number of injuries this season, so it's been a bit stop-start for both of them this year. But it's just funny how much we were saying in Bielsa's system that they were going to have to rely on these two wing-backs, and it's actually turning out more on the left side, that Alioski has turned out to be a better option at that side, and maybe Shackleton might end up being a better option than that. But although Ailing, again, like you said there, was much better last night, until the 85th minute when he completely unneeded challenge, but hopefully it doesn't dent his confidence too much. But
that challenge, though, is incidental to the way in which you play in Bielsa's system. That was just a misjudgment and a kind of mental block at late in the game. I think it's easy probably to underestimate the difficulty of playing in the way that Bielsa wants you to. And I have wondered over the past few weeks whether it has been a bit of a challenge for Ayling. When you're wide on the right, when you're in the full-back position, you don't have space to play and you don't have space in front of you in the way that Janssen and Cooper do. The ball's coming at you quickly. You've got to be very intricate with it. I guess not everybody is 100% suited to that. But Ayling will know that he's under scrutiny. He'll know that people are watching him. I think when your form's not great, you feel yourself like you have to play well. And I thought he did last night, and I think it'll definitely help him. And also, we got the first goal last night, didn't we? I think it was Popey at the presser on Tuesday was asking Bielsa about the fact that it had only been Derby in the previous 8 games, I think, that Leeds had scored first. And Bielsa talks a lot about, you know, he talks about efficiency, so taking of chances. And if you look at the number of chances Leeds create compared to the number they score, you would say, well, yeah, they should be scoring more. But it's kind of dawned on me that the bigger issue is that they're creating chances in periods of the game where it's goalless. They're not taking the chances, the other team are scoring, and it's creating a completely different match. They're not making the most of the dominance in the periods where they could take the game by the scruff of the neck. And I suspect that's probably more frustrating than Bielsa, than the simple equation of how many chances do we create and how many chances do we score. I think, like last night when the pressure was on, they need to be scoring when Janssen scores. They need to then be taking advantage with Harrison, and ideally they need Bamford to be sticking away the header. And if they're doing that, and if they do that consistently, I think from this point with 14 games to go, they're going to be extremely difficult to stop.
Well, I think that's the key thing, isn't it? We're getting to a stage of the season where it's crucial now, and it's, again, falling into a cliche, but results are all that matters at this stage of the season. It doesn't really matter how you play. But Leeds have sort of matched up the performances for, I would say, 3/4 of the season. But they just haven't put maybe the results together that they deserve off the back of those. And it's because maybe the leaky defence started to come after that 7-game winning run. And suddenly the goals dried up from KMR Roof, because obviously he had a red hot first half of the season. But it's hopefully where Bamford comes in and helps. And I actually thought Bamford and Roof links up quite well. Probably far better than the Middlesbrough game at the weekend. And hopefully, the more minutes Bamford gets on the pitch, he can sort of start pitching into that 9 million signing that they were getting in the summer. So, obviously, another player that's fallen foul to injuries this season. But he has a big role to play in these last 14 games if he can become that focal point of the attack. And again, last night, maybe a bit rusty and heading that ball straight at Mulder in the goal, but on another day he takes that and it's 3-0 and you're going, bloody hell, 3-0 after half an hour.
He just needs to get sharp. He's hardly played since the summer, and it isn't quite clicking between him and Roof, but you get the feeling that it just might, and that'll work really nicely.
That could be a massive thing to have them both on the pitch in these last 14 games. Could be the thing that makes or breaks this. And I mean, we're talking about pivotal weeks. Leeds have got a good rest now, but then they've got, 3 games in 6 days? It's easy to say it defines the season, because it couldn't, but that is a big run of games where if you can go unbeaten through there and maybe Bamford chips in with a couple of goals, it's a big week to go out and put a statement out of winning a couple of games and getting a draw or whatever else. You know, at this stage of the season, it's all about results, and you just need someone to put the ball in the back of the net now. He can sit and Bielsa can talk till he's blue in the face about conversion rates and all that, but at the end of the day, just put the ball in the back of the net and win games.
What I liked about Pontus Janssen, though, when he was speaking on Tuesday, was that I asked him whether they're better equipped now to finish the season off than they were when Monk was in charge and they were going for the playoffs, or they were last season when it was looking good under Christensen. And I think after 31 games before last night, they were only 4 points better off than where they were with Monk. They were in good shape with him at this stage. And I expected Janssen to say yes, because no player's ever going to say no, and he did. But he justified it by saying the reason for that isn't because I think we have, you know, I think we'll be better at holding our nerve. I don't think we'll bottle it in the same way. He was saying if you go through the performance indicators, and obviously Bielsa loves his analysis, we're creating the most chances in the league, give or take. We're conceding the fewest chances in the league, give or take. We on all the sort of like expected goals and everything else, performance indicators, we're really, really high. So we're playing in a way which should win us games and should get us points. And I think he's right. I think the performances are overall considerably better. I think they're playing in a way which is going to get them very, very close to the finishing line this season. And I would personally would be far more disappointed now if this season was to drop off. Than I'm still amazed that they didn't make the playoffs under Monk. You know, it's almost inconceivable from the position they were in they didn't manage to get there. And with Christensen, you were never quite sure whether it was just flash in the pan stuff because we knew so little about him. But this would be an absolutely spectacular collapse if they were not to go very, very, very close now. Very close. Without saying more than that.
I'm just saying, I'll remind you of that tweet that you sent under Monk, but yeah.
That was oh, not quite 2 years ago now, but it's coming. It was the end of March, what I think, or middle of March. Wording? I said something like, consider the playoffs nailed. Oh, head things you wish you'd never tweeted.
Head in hand. But
I have learned my lesson. Once bitten.
What you were just saying there, like proper Bielsa disciple stuff, that, isn't it? Regurgitating what the head coach is basically drilling into you. But not only that, it's like, what he's saying there, and genuinely believes, that belief sort of resonates through the squad almost, mm-hmm. because of these, it's almost another level of belief, because like, it's like, I'm not just telling you you're good, look at the stats, they tell you that you are good, and
you're
good.
The players keep saying, don't they? They all keep saying, we think we're the best team in the league, which is actually an unusual thing to hear mm-hmm. players say. Normally, when it's about promotion, or how good you are, or how bad anybody else is, everybody
like,
just...
It's like the British thing, isn't it, yeah, to play it down.
Occupy the middle ground. I always say this about boxing, it can be quite refreshing getting into covering boxing from time to time, because when you speak to boxers, they don't make any attempt to be diplomatic or to kind of go down the PR route of... I interviewed Josh Warrington the other week and asked him about this Kid Galahad fight, and straight away he was saying, well, he failed a drugs test 2 years ago, he was banned, so, or 3 years ago. So from my point of view, he's a disgrace to the sport. You think, boom, here we go, we're off and running. And football just doesn't work like that. But they do say a lot. They're quite happy to talk about promotion, more so, I think, than they have been in previous years. But they do say regularly, we think we're the best team in the league. Phillips was saying it after Middlesbrough, we want to show people we're the best team in the league, because they think they are, and they know from the performance indicators that the data says that they are.
This is going to sound really like Rocky-esque or whatever, but any team...
We better not use that theme music either. It's not fair, this, is it?
Well, any team or individual that you look back on in sport has to have that inner belief in what they're going to achieve and the goal that they've set themselves. If Calvin Phillips was coming out after the game, or Jack Harrison after these last couple of games, going, well, playoffs would be, a good thing to achieve from here. And it's like, well, hold on, you're top of the league. You know, that mental attitude that they're coming out and saying, well, we're the best in the league, is going to resonate into performances, you'd hope. And that's the belief that you've got to have to achieve. You've got 14 games to go and you're top of the table. So that, therefore, you are the best team in the league. I don't think the table lies at the moment. Norwich are a very good side as well, but I think they are, if not the best, very close to being the best team on their day. So I think you've got to hold that belief.
I know a lot of Leeds fans have been frustrated over the years by the narrative that always seems to come at the beginning of the season, which is, yes, we think we're good enough to make the playoffs, and everybody says, well, there is an alternative to the playoffs, which is to go up automatically, which I don't, at this stage, is the only... I mean, the only target and the only priority for the club. I mean, nobody from the position they're in would be interested or keen to get involved in the playoffs now. But you do, I think you're right. I think without being unrealistic about your own potential and what you've got in the squad, I think when you're playing as well as Leeds have played over the course of the season, you have to think that's the way it's going to go. We haven't got a game this weekend because the QPR match has been moved to the 26th of February, right during half term, which is always helpful. So Granny will be picking up the kids. But other teams are playing. Norwich are away at Bolton. Norwich got a good old hiding at Preston.
Two long trips up for them in a week.
Yeah, it is. I don't know if they've stayed up. They might as well have done, given that it's in the same neck of the woods. I was listening to Daniel Farke on the radio. I haven't seen the goals or the highlights, but he seemed to be saying that Preston got lucky with about four shots on goal. Norwich had about 23, 24, and scored only once. Preston scored three times, won the game. I don't know if that's true, but he didn't seem overly... I missed the penalty as well, yeah, so did Norwich. So he didn't seem overly concerned about that. Sheffield United, really, really good home win against Middlesbrough. And I have to say, I'm without... annoying anybody in this part of Yorkshire. I'm really impressed with Chris Wilder at Sheffield United. That, a little bit like Leeds, that's a squad which a lot of people on paper would not, you know, without the results that they're getting, would not be expecting them to be where they are, and they are right in the mix for the top two, I feel. And looking to me a bit more consistent than West Brom, who go to Villa on Saturday. So Saturday's fixtures, you've got West Brom away at Villa, you've got Norwich away at Bolton, you've got Sheffield United at home to Reading. Leeds don't play now until next Saturday, when they have Bolton at home. And West Brom have a game before then as well, which is at home to away at QPR. Dwight Gayle looks like he's going to get a 2-game ban for them for that unbelievable dive against Nottingham Forest, but sadly that will run out before West Brom roll up at Elland Road. So the table's going to change a fair amount this weekend. But I guess the reassuring thing for Leeds is that as of 5 o'clock on Saturday, the worst position they could be in is third on goal difference. And given the sort of inconsistency of the division, not that unlikely they might finish the day top.
Yeah, and I mean, we were just talking there about the confidence, and there is going to be one team very, very disappointed in 14 games' time, isn't there, that are falling into the playoffs out of at least the top three. And that's ruling out the fact that West Brom might come into it, Borough, Derby, Bristol City, whoever else. But at the moment, it's looking like a three-horse race for two positions. So there is going to be one very disappointed team. And we saw it a few seasons ago with Brighton, didn't they, who were basically in the top two for the whole year and fell out and then got knocked out in the semi-finals of the playoffs. So it's not... It's by no means am I saying that Leeds should be overconfident, but they should be holding a confidence to an extent where they should believe that they can achieve automatic promotion from this situation. But like you say there, the worst position that Leeds can be is, well, you either call it joint top on goal difference or third on goal difference or whatever, you know, joint top on points, goal difference, whatever it is. But if you'd given any Leeds fan this scenario at the start of the season in the summer, I think they'd have been like, what? But I think the fact that we're now talking about playoffs potentially being a disappointment is a remarkable achievement and a bit of maybe perspective needed. But how is that ever going to, you know, I think it's going to be disappointing, isn't it, from here?
Yeah, Nigel Atkins was saying it a while back that there are going to be some good teams and some big clubs who are disappointed at the end of this season. Although Nigel Atkins also said that the biggest room in your house is the room for improvement. So... I don't really know what to make of any of that. We'll move on to just a couple of other issues. I was going to say fringe issues, but Spygate isn't really a fringe issue. And before that, it looks like Robbie Gott's young academy player is going to get a new contract. He's up at the end of this season, but one who Leeds want to keep and will keep. I think that's in the process of getting done as we speak.
Looks a good talent.
As our 23s man, what's his winger stroke fullback, isn't he? What's he all
so
about? What do you think of him?
Started the season at fullback and has moved into an attacking midfield sort of like clique role in recent months, and has looked completely at home. His pace and sort of low sense of gravity on the ball is really good. So yeah, got a very good prospect there, and I think has got a very bright future should he eventually break through.
Yeah, he's been on the bench 6 times, hasn't played yet, but it seems to be one of those that falls into the category of someone Bielsa would quite happily play.
Versatile.
Yeah. Yeah, somebody Bielsa would quite happily play if he needed a goalkeeper, and you know, that was the way it was.
It's interesting that he's moulded Gotts, who is naturally a right back, into an attacking midfielder, and Shackleton, who is naturally an attacking midfielder, into a right back. So that kind of tells you the traits that Bielsa looks for in these youngsters. But
it is only a matter of time before Leif Davis plays in goal, inevitably.
Not at all.
Or maybe Bielsa gives himself a game. Well, let's wrap up with Spygate, which I'm afraid we've got to keep going at until we get a resolution on this. It was a strange week last week. The EFL's board met on Thursday to discuss this. There are 3 championship reps on the board of the EFL. They were excluded from the discussions on the basis of being compromised and having a vested interest potentially in the outcome of this. Leeds aren't saying much about this, and they were quite cordial in the end with what they did say last week. But internally, they are pretty frustrated about the way it's been handled. I think they're annoyed about comments that have been made by officials from other clubs. They're annoyed about issues like the repeated mentions of bolt cutters, when in actual fact the intern who went had secateurs for the purposes of cutting the bushes. I'm not saying either is particularly great, but
the facts are the facts,
and also bolt cutters implies that you're trying to break into the ground. Secateurs imply that you've got
rose bushes to cut.
Yeah, you're green fingered, and you're thinking you'll tend the bushes round about Derby's training ground. But I think it's the accuracy of it and the feeling that they're not necessarily getting a fair hearing at
the
moment.
That's what you should have done. Sorry.
What's that?
Should just pretend he was gardening.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, what are you doing here? Practicing for the Chelsea Flower Show. Yeah, Leeds very much thought the back end of last week there would be an announcement of some sort. So they would either be punished directly by the Football League, they would be cleared by the Football League, or given a warning of sorts, or they would be charged and under probably Regulation 3.4, which relates to good faith, and the case would go to an independent panel to be reviewed. What we got in the end on Friday afternoon was the equivalent of a holding statement which said, following a comprehensive review of all available evidence, it was determined that there remain a number of areas that require further exploration and clarification, and these investigations will take place at the earliest opportunity. An update on this matter will be provided following receipt and analysis of those subsequent inquiries, and until that point, no further comment will be made. That was from the EFL. Which, quite honestly, makes you think that nobody really knows how to sort this out. There is no rule that's been broken, no direct rule relating to the privacy of training grounds, and the EFL have been honest about that. They could potentially punish Leeds on the grounds of good faith, although that's a massively grey area, and I think the document that Leeds sent back to the EFL arguing the case pretty much made that point. If this counts as a breach of good faith, then don't multiple other issues relating to other incidents, and where exactly do you draw the line on what does and what doesn't constitute a breach? Having thought about this, I think the thing I think that the EFL leads is an investigation that doesn't compromise the season, because if they decide that Bielsa and Leeds didn't gain any competitive advantage from this spying, if you want to call it that, or the observation of opposition training grounds, and I have to say, you'd be hard-pressed, honestly, to find anybody of a sensible disposition who thinks that they have gained a significant advantage, then it cannot be the case that this saga, this dispute, is allowed to be a competitive disadvantage, if you understand what I'm meaning, because it's a distraction, because it's hanging over the club, because it isn't being dealt with. I cannot believe that this hasn't been sorted out already. I can't believe that this needs much more in the way of investigation or looking into. I know that the clubs who sent the collective letter to the EFL want to know details about whether payments were made to third parties or inside sources. They want all the details of the scouting trips, the expenses from it and everything else. But really, given that Bielsa has held his hands up, has spoken to the FA, has done that media brief and has told them everything pretty much they want to know, they must be able to deal with this.
You think so? And the timing of that statement was a bit of a joke as well, wasn't it? What, on the eve of a big game for Leeds, 1 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon, what was it, 5 o'clock, something like that?
Half past four, I think, yeah.
Just, again, a long list of things that you've said there. Leeds are internally frustrated. I think they've got every right to be, given Sean Harvey's comments on TalkSport when there's an investigation ongoing, Bristol City chairman coming out, and yeah, I mean, you can list the things he's said, but just when the investigation is ongoing, keep your mouth shut. When it's finished, then have your say, once there's actually been an outcome. And the same with Harvey, really. You know, he's the one that's supposed to be chairing the EFL, and he's going on TalkSport and speaking about this situation, making promises maybe that he doesn't know whether they can definitely keep, because again, the investigation hasn't been completed. So yeah, it's getting to a point where it's a bit of a shambles. And what is it, we're now 6 weeks on? 6 weeks?
Yeah, it's best part of the month, really. Yeah.
So I don't think anyone thought that when this came out, we'd still be talking about the potential ramifications of what's happened a month on, or 5 weeks on, or whatever it is now. So it just needs to come to a conclusion and a head. And if it rumbles on to the end of the season, are we going to get to a stage where Leeds have won promotion or missed out on promotion by a point or blah, 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 whatever, you know, where we still don't know if there's going to be a points deduction. It doesn't sound likely, but you know, it, like, because you don't know what's going to happen, you can't rule it out.
No, so. there's still no suggestion that that will be way the sanction. But just, if it goes to an independent panel, it is entirely their prerogative to decide on the punishment, and I think all options are open to them.
That's what I mean. So you're going to come to a situation. So say on the final day of the season, Leeds are a point ahead of Norwich. Norwich are the ones that have led this letter. You still don't have a conclusion to this investigation. Leeds win promotion by a point. Norwich is going kicking and screaming, saying, well, they deserve a points deduction because of blah, blah. It's just going to be an absolute mess, isn't it? It just needs to come to a conclusion.
Well, see, so, 2000,
I mean, that's an extreme.
See, 2008, when Leeds had the 15-point deduction. See, 2011, when QPR had all the issue with Fallon and third-party ownership. It is amazing the number of times that the governing body seem to get into this sort of scrape and be in a situation where their own rules don't allow them to deal with something in a sort of expedited manner. But that's where we are. As far as I can tell, that there has been further communication from the EFL to Leeds United, essentially asking whether or not they still stand by all the comments made by Bielsa, the submissions they've made, which the club obviously do. So it might be that we're moving down the line towards some sort of resolution, but I'm afraid to say we can't offer any date or timeline on this, and we can't offer any guidance on potential punishment.
There will be a point solution. I just mean that is a scenario potentially present its head because of this ridiculous nature that is just rumbling on.
The situation is that nobody is implying that that's going to happen, but all avenues of punishment would be open to an independent panel. Yeah. So it until you get a resolution on this, nobody is going to be quite clear. But it's a free weekend, so let's not worry about Spygate. Let's all
go off,
drink and be merry. Joe's off to tell his wife, who I'm sure is dressed up for a night out, that given the game away. It's it's Valentine's Day. Hopefully she's not listening. She'll be at home going, oh, it's going to be the best day of my life, this. Joe's girlfriend will be dressed up ready for a night out, only to find that you go home and tell her that Valentine's Day is a little bollocks.
Well, you've just married me off.
Well, yeah. If you were planning that, I'm really sorry, because I've just ruined your February 14th.
Whatever answer I give right now, I am going to get buried alive. So I'm just going to walk out of the room, I think.
Let's be honest.
Bye.
Your missus doesn't listen to this podcast. My missus doesn't listen to this podcast. You know it. I know it. And I don't think mine even pretends that she does, but maybe
people
she should
close
start
to her might listen to it and pass
a
on.
Fascinating hour. What else would you do with your time? Well, listen, thanks everybody. We've sort of rambled on for long enough this week. We haven't had a look ahead to Bolton because we've got a long time to go before then, and also the games to come over the weekend, but we will most certainly be back with you early next week to have a good chat about that and catch up on where Leeds are with training, with injuries. A few players will play in the 23s tomorrow night, and again on Monday. The most prominent players, the ones who started against Swansea last night and have been heavily involved under Bielsa, have got 4 days off now, a little bit like us, which is nice.
I'm off tuck shopping, apparently.
Oh, are you?
Well, for my wedding.
Well, yeah, it's fun, I can tell you. Yeah.
Married me up.
There's the weekend from heaven. But anyway, I hope you all have a better weekend than that, and we'll see you next week. Thanks for listening. I'll always remember.